You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. I don't know what episode it is. It's just a Tom and John episode, so it's chaos as usual.
69-420.
It's 69, episode 69-420. This is features editor John Gentile. I'm here with Tom Trauma. A lot happening.
I'm pretty sure I heard my teenage son howl with laughter in the back room when I said that. Sorry, John, I threw you off.
How old is your teenage son?
15.
15, so 69, that, like when you're 15, the concept of 69 is like the funniest thing ever.
Well, and the 420 thing, you know, that's not...
I don't know, man. Is like weed a big deal to kids at all anymore? I mean, Tom, when we were kids, like weed was like verboten, but now it's like all over. You know, they smoke weed on like sitcoms, you know what I mean?
It's like, I think weed is to the kids in high school now what like Bush Light was to when I was in high school.
Yeah. Anyways, so Tom's had a very big week this week. First of all, Tom, you debuted a new podcast with Liverpool Neil.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about the podcast, what you do on it, and why you're seeking to destroy the Punk News Podcast with your own branch off the side project.
It's funny because
I sense a little off circle jerks parallel here. But by all means, Tom, go ahead.
Well, I knew that you, John, of all people, I knew you would automatically sense it as a rivalry that needed to be snuffed out. That's why I've been so cautious about it. But no, it's not a competitor to the Punk News Podcast. I like to think of it as more like supplemental. Because, you know, I'd sit around with a couple of guys in their mid-30s. I'm in my mid-40s. I usually sit around with a couple of guys in their mid-30s who complain about how old they feel. So I've decided to really double down on that and pair up with a guy who's 10 years older than me. So really trying to breathe some youthful vitality into this scene. But no, it's a different kind of show. We're not going to be as news-centric. And it's just kind of like, and on a good day, I think it'd be like eavesdropping on a couple old guys as they relive their glory years. And we're eventually going to start doing some interviews and things, and it's just fun. It's just a couple of pals sitting around, you know, talking about old time punk rock stuff.
And Tom,
two different continents, two different age groups, you know, it's fun.
We just
enjoy it.
I thought Liverpool Neil lives in the USA now.
Yes, he's in the Chicago area.
And what's the show called?
It's called Punk Till I Die.
And where can people find it? Should they go to Punk News, or where should they go to find it?
It's on iTunes, but it is under the Punk News umbrella, at least until we get kicked off.
There you go. And meanwhile, Tom Trauma was kicking it down to New Orleans this past weekend. Tom, how was the gumbo? How was the food? How was the music? And how were the record shops?
My wife's more of a gumbo eater. I'm more of a po' boy guy.
Oh, so you like hoagies?
It's just the shrimp, you know. So living in Michigan, we don't have a lot of seafood. If we do, it's not very good. So I must have ate shrimp almost every other meal, I swear. So I ate a ton of shrimp. But New Orleans is fantastic. I got on a plane Sunday morning. We were supposed to leave Grand Rapids, Michigan at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning. I was driving to the airport at 4 o'clock, and it was snowing so hard that I slid through a red light. And then we got on the plane, and we had a three-hour delay because the snow was so bad.
Brutal.
They did that thing where they put us on the plane, and it was so hot, and my ass fell asleep in about 2 seconds.
Oh, brutal.
And then so we get there. And got off the plane and started walking around, got a cab over to the hotel and checked our bags, and I'm walking around going, why am I wearing jeans? I'm sweating profusely. It was 70 and beautiful, you know? So it's amazing. And then, yeah, we went to Mexico for a few days. But in New Orleans, I just did not show up at the right time for a show. I was looking and looking and looking. It was like the day after we left, DRI was playing, and there was a couple other like things, but there was just nothing while we were there. So I did not go to a show. I did do a little record shopping. I actually have a kind of a funny story about it, but I think I might save it for next week. But anyway, yeah, we had a really nice time. Mrs. Trauma and I, we had our 25th anniversary earlier this year. So we went to, yeah. And you know what? It's the longest vacation we've had without the kids forever. And it was really nice. And then we get home, and like we're way behind, and now we're more stressed out than ever. So
how's your kids fare at being home by themselves?
You know, they cleaned the house before we got home, and I think they did fine. They're kind of, you know, they're not the two minors we have are not young. They're 12 and 15, and their older brother actually helped watch them. Their 20-year-old brother. So yeah, it was good.
Do you think they had a wacky 80s style party? You know what I mean?
You know, they were threatening, but I think probably not. Tom, but I'm not sure.
Tom, have you ever actually been to like a wacky 80s style party, like in high school or whatever?
Oh, come on. Yeah, I used to watch the movies all the time, and they'd show these parties, and people were like sliding down stairs into pools of beer and dancing and all this stuff. And I'm like, all our parties were really sad. It was a bunch of people standing around the garage smoking cigarettes and maybe like a few people standing around drinking beer. I very few parties I ever went to that were like, you know, B-movie quality.
What annoyed me is there's always like 150 people at like these crazy parties where everyone's having a blast at.
135 dudes, right?
15 yeah. chicks. At the parties I've been to, it's like 12 people in high school. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I mean, I went to a few ragers, definitely. I mean, yeah.
In high school or in college?
In high school.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't think I ever went to a rager in high school.
See, I was a I did not live at college. I was a college commuter, so I never really got deep into that scene.
I will say Penn State did have some crazy fun parties back in the day.
Oh, I'm sure. You know what's funny? Okay, I do take that back a little bit because when I was playing in the band in the early 90s, when I was college age, we would occasionally go play at a neighboring college, and we played a couple of college parties, one especially, I mean, one gig, my whole musical career down to one college gig where it really was pretty close to like movie level, and it was crazy and it was great fun.
And two old guys reliving.
Yeah. Well, college. Well, listen, I've been out of high school for like 28 years or something, you know?
Tom, we'll get to the news in a second, but don't, honestly, maybe once every 4 or 5 months, I'll just like, maybe I'm eating lunch, I'll just drift off and kind of project myself back to like an awesome college party. Do you ever do that? You know, like for me, the big party was senior week where we had like a massive party. It was ridiculous, you know?
And you were never much of a drinker, right?
No, never. I mean, the only time I ever really drank was like the first 3 or 4 rugby parties that I went to. And then I'm like, well, why am I drinking this? I hate it. And I just kind of stopped drinking, you know?
Well, that's what most people do. They hate it at first, but then they stick with it. You're a quitter, John.
Yeah, I guess I'm a quitter. But listen, speaking about running away from your problems and trying to relive your youth, Tom, Punk Rock yes. Bowling is this summer. It is like May 27th.
It is every summer, yes.
And last Punk Rock Bowling, I had one of the funnest times of my life.
I remember you talking about that.
Like, it was so amazing. It really was one of the funnest times in my life. It was fun because the bands were like John G. Band after John G. I mean, Coat Hangers, Flag, Damned, World Inferno, Flipper, Leftover Crack, Dwarves. I mean, that's John G. Central. You know what I mean? Like, it was Sloppy Seconds. It was John G. Drew Getz. It was John G. Central. This year, the punk rock, and also a lot of my friends were out there. One of my friends got married out there. So it was like all my friends were out there. We were all having fun. There's a million amazing bands. It was awesome. This year, Punk Rock Bowling is kind of more on the Epifat side with a couple notable exceptions, namely Madness, Circle Jerks, and Coxbar. And the rest is mostly Epifat bands, which is not my thing. And I was totally planning on going to Punk Rock Bowling this year because I had such a fun last year. But the only trepidation I had is like, well, it's probably not going to be as fun as it was like last year just because like the circumstances are the same. And so it might wind up being a big bummer. And now, Tom, I know you were mildly thinking about going. But now, yes. Madness has announced more USA dates, 3 more USA dates. One in New York City, one in Oakland, and one in Boston, of all places. Maybe hopefully Philly Dan will get announced.
Maybe they're playing like a Dropkick Murphys St. Patrick's Day party or something.
Meanwhile, Circle Jerks, who had a whole bunch of Euro dates announced and only one USA date, Punk Rock Bowling, have now announced a second USA date, which suggests there might be many more to come.
I did not see that. Where was that?
Circle Jerks is playing Burger Boogaloo with Bikini Kill.
Oh, that's right. I did know that. Forget it.
They're playing Burger Boogaloo, which is just after Punk Rock Bowling, July 11th. Bikini Kill, Circle Jerks, Flipper, Alice Bag, Panty Division, John Waters is hosting. A couple other cool bands are playing as well. Carbonas, Midnight Snacks, and some other bands. And I've been to one Burger Boogaloo about 10 years ago, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was just a one-day thing. It was a lot of fun. Oh, a guy called Plastic Bertrand is playing. We can talk about it if we want. Anyways, so Tom, I got to say, I really do think that the Madness additional dates and Circle Jerks at Burger Boogaloo, to me, at least from my perspective, that's cutting into Punk Rock Bowling and is seriously making me reconsider even going to Punk Rock Bowling when maybe I'll just go to Burger Boogaloo.
Now Punk Rock Bowling, if I'm not mistaken, is in the big stage is maybe the 5,000 to 10,000 range.
Exactly.
Now Burger Boogaloo's got to be much smaller than that, right?
Yeah, but actually,
a couple thousand.
Right, exactly, a couple thousand. Yeah.
So if you are looking for intimacy, that's going to be your, you know, if your big thing is this, if you're willing to go to Punk Rock Bowling just for the Circle Jerks thing, yeah, you'd probably be better off to go to Burger Boogaloo. But Las Vegas and San Francisco or Oakland are not that close together. It's a whole lot easier for me to fly into Las Vegas than it is to fly into San Francisco or Oakland.
You know what? You know what, Tom? You bring up another point that I really had to consider. Like, if you go to Burger Boogaloo, like, all right, you go record shopping during the day, you go to Burger Boogaloo at night, watch the shows, and then, you know, go to your hotel.
Well, that's an all-day thing, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying...
Is it multiple days?
It's 2 days. So you go to a record shop or you get lunch or whatever, then you go to Burger Boogaloo and that's it. Whereas, on the other hand, punk rock bowling is popping, like, 20 hours a day. Like, you go to the record shop, you hang out, you relax a little bit, you get some good food, you go to the main punk rock bowling, then you go to the club show, then maybe you hang out some more. So that is a good point. It's more of a wild party.
You know, so you did record shopping in Vegas.
Yes, I did, quite extensively.
Now, I did not last time I was there, which was 2 years ago, just like a long weekend with some other couples. The problem I have is, you know, you fly now on these airlines and you can only have so much weight in your bag. So when I was in New Orleans, I was actually very conscious of that. So I only bought one LP, and the rest of the stuff I bought were singles just because I know they're light. But I bought a book, and books are always heavy too. And then I was afraid to put my records in my suitcase because I was so heavy with clothes that I ended up carrying them anyway. So I don't know. I these stupid airlines with these bag restrictions, I'm afraid to do too much record shopping when I fly.
Well, see, usually you get two bags. You get one bag you check and one carry-on and a book bag if you want. But honestly, I hate being the guy that like pushes the boundary. Like, I hate that guy. You know, I hate
well, you know, and you don't. You see the way they throw those checked bags around. You don't want your records in that checked bag.
So I mean, what I do is I actually like kind of leave my carry-on bag like not that full, so I can put records in. That's why when I went to Netherlands, my carry-on bag was essentially empty, and I packed a full record on my way back. But anyway, so I mean, Tom, do you think like the Circle Jerks, like and the Madness shows, is that going to significantly cut into punk rock bowling? Because from my perspective, that's kind of robbing their thunder.
I think punk rock bowling is its own entity to the point where it probably won't matter that much.
You think it's like Fest?
Yeah, I think it kind of is.
Really?
I mean, there's people that go to it every year. There's closed face. I'm in a closed Facebook group that's like the whole Facebook group is just devoted to punk rock bowling.
Really?
Yeah, no, it's got to...
I'm in that group.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll tag you and ask some ridiculous question that's clearly parody and see if any of the dummies in there can figure it out and see if Facebook actually lets you see it.
I got to tell you, Tom, Burger Boogaloo looks pretty awesome. Circle Jerk,
That does look like a lot of fun. I have an uncle in San Francisco, and I really am dying to get out there.
You've got an uncle in San Francisco.
I do, and I'm dying to get out there. He's like my only cool uncle. He's like my punk rock uncle. He actually made a documentary that he's still tinkering with about the first wave scene out there. It has like the Avengers and the mutants and all that in it.
Well, he needs to put that out.
He does. We should tell him, man, we're ready to run a clip of that. Come on, bring it on. But yeah. No, it's cool. I've actually seen it, but he just can't. He keeps buying old footage and stuff, and he had to get a Jello interview in there and all that stuff. So anyway, it's cool. But yeah, I would love to get out there. But I don't know. Now I see, like, because I really want to go to punk rock bowling. It's like a bucket list thing for me. But now I see all this stuff that's early spring planned for tours. And I'm like, oh, boy, I might already have enough on my plate that I don't even get out there, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's expensive and it's...
punk rock bowling's pretty cheap, Tom. It's pretty real
cheap. Well, it is for you. But, you know, by the time I fly out there and, you know, I do enjoy the occasional PBR and... the hotels and all that. I don't know. I just can't
hotels
imagine.
Hotels are mega cheap and all. Like, that's their thing.
I would probably, and the fact of the matter is, I'd bring my buddy, and we'd probably bring our wives, and they'd probably...
Well, that adds it up, yeah.
Hang by the pool or whatever during the day, you know? But I would love to do that. I would love to meet up with you out there, or I know Ricky usually goes. I'd love to meet up with our man Ricky. Did you see him last year, or did he not go?
No, he didn't go.
Okay. But I would love to do that. You know, I would... I think we can get some good hang time, but I just don't know. It's a coin flip yet.
Well, they have it. I think it is cutting you. I hope Madness does like a Philadelphia show. I'd love it. Tom, you don't really care about Madness.
You're gonna book them, aren't you? You're gonna book them in that record store. Your shows.
Yeah.
Madness is not a big draw for me.
See, for me, it's
the other two headliners are much more of my liking.
See, I've seen Cox Bar so many times. I mean, they're fine, you know, but.
Well, you know, how I feel about Cox Bar is kind of probably how you feel about punk rock bowling. Last time I saw them, they were honestly so good. They're never going to be that good again. So it's kind of You know how that is? You see a band like, oh my gosh, that was the best show. How am I ever, how are they going to top that? It's just going to be disappointing after that. So
here's a question that hasn't been addressed. The Circle Jerks, are they going to totally annihilate, or will it be kind of like late, you know?
I think they're going to be great.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be on a mission. You know what I mean? Because they have to prove they can hang with Off and Flag and all that. They're not going to want to go out there and look like turds.
Yeah,
Keith
yeah.
Morris is having a career renaissance in his 60s. He doesn't want to go over there and look like a jerk now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why sometimes with Vega we don't need to be. Xander Slosh famously is kind of like laid back and like folk music. Like, you know, like Stephen McDonald wants to kick ass. Chuck Dukowski definitely wants to kick ass, you know. Does Xander really care, you know?
Who's drumming?
They don't know. No, they haven't announced it yet. Right.
I don't know. I think it'd be great. I know, you know, I've missed the boat with seeing them in the 90s when they were so easy to see. So I definitely like to see them. I saw them once, but
I think they'll be. I mean, I think Keith does demand a certain excellence because he is a little bit of a diva to his credit, and he should be. And he doesn't want to look foolish. I think Keith, to a degree, feels as though, like, I need to live up to my station. You know, and yeah. I agree.
Even though this is still, I still think this is totally about the money. I agree with that. Though.
Sure.
Anyway, and I don't. You know, it's funny because I just don't even begrudge him.
No, why would you
begrudge him taking the money?
Why?
Well, because it's not a punk rock motivation.
Yeah. Yes, but on the other hand, I think all the punkers are starting to realize that okay, Keith Morris is an icon. He's about as important as it gets, or if not, then close to it. And he's kind of broke or sort of broke. And if anybody has money, he should have money, not Social Distortion or even Rancid. You know, like Keith Moore should have cash, you know. So,
boy, John's swinging the broadsword.
I am. Well, I'm going to keep swinging because check this out. So, Henry Rollins recently appeared as part of Cyndi Lauper's True Colors event. And at that event, Cyndi Lauper raises money for an organization that combats homelessness for young LGBTA people. She does it every year and has a lot of guests, including people like Sting, and I think maybe Paul McCartney might have done it one year. One of the many guests this year was Henry. And on stage, Henry and Cyndi Lauper did Rise Above, the Black Flag classic. Everyone loved it. I thought the recording was great and amusing and cool. Tom, what'd you think?
Man, I got to tell you, John, so I wasn't necessarily planning to podcast tonight. I'm kind of a last-minute addition. I didn't watch it.
Well,
I have not listened to this. I am negligent. Everybody's been talking about it on the internet, and I'm just like, meh.
Well,
Tell me how it is. Come on, do I have to watch tomorrow or not?
It's exactly what you think it would be.
So musically, is it like punk music?
Yeah.
Okay. Like Weezer doing Africa?
No, it's a house band doing an approximation of punk rock with Henry and Cyndi Lauper singing, and they both do a good job. But you know, I'm so annoyed.
I don't dislike Cyndi Lauper.
Everyone loves her, you know. But I'm so annoyed at Henry because Henry during the Black Flag battle, instead of staying out of it or instead of backing his homeboy Keith, who backed him so many times before this whole thing cropped up, he was subtly dissing on Flag and even dissed them directly in an Australian interview. And despite the fact that he did a Black Flag tour as Henry doing Black Flag. And he trashing them so much. And then here he is again doing Black Flag as if it's cool, it's fine. Even though he was dissing on Keith for the past 5 years for doing Black Flag and Chuck Dukowski. Honestly, I've lost a lot of respect. I used to think Henry was like the man. I've lost a lot of respect for him in the past 10 years. And to a degree, it's like Henry says whatever, quote, sounds cool at the time, but none of it has any real meaning or integrity, if you will. You know, it's all just, this sounds cool right now, and I'm going to spin it this way. But, you know, I don't really attach myself to any true foundation.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about Henry, man. As much as I'd love to see him make music again, I don't know, John. He's sort of lost a lot of goodwill with me in recent years. I'm not even sure why. I think it's kind of his know-it-allishness.
I think it's a combination. And listen, I still like Henry. I still like Henry. I still respect Henry. But I have become annoyed with him. And like Thompson, he has lost goodwill with me. I think part of it is the know-it-all-ishness. But the other part is like his willful rejection of punk rock and almost saying punk rock doesn't matter. You know, it's like, oh, well, you're not as good as the Avengers. So, you know, your old hat, you know, his rejection of modern punk. Not that he needs to say, like, you know, the boring Clash ripoff band is good. But there's a lot of really awesome new punk bands. And I feel like he willfully ignores them or even disses on them. And then he's like, here's a noise record I played, or here's some boring college rock band, or here's Ty Segall playing the same song he plays 100 times before, but all this is great. You know, I feel as though he has no real foundation, and everything he does is a reaction, but it's not even a true reaction. It's a reaction just to make some sort of point that he doesn't really even adhere to. I'm just annoyed that he dissed on my band Keith. You diss Keith, I diss you.
It's funny, dude, because, you know, you bring up a point, because all these guys... once they get a little bit of what you'd call mainstream success,
yeah,
sort of mainstream recognition, what's the first thing they do? They sort of try to distance themselves from their punk roots, right? And then when everything else falls apart, what do?
Go back to punk.
They go back to punk because that punk crowd will always let them come back, you know? So Henry's managed to be successful. He's managed to make a good living doing some other stuff. But if he was as broke as Keith Morris, let me tell you, he'd be out there howling about having a nervous breakdown.
Just what
annoys... He'd be out there singing My War, I guarantee it.
Like, what annoys me the most, it's kind of this DC thing, this passive-aggressive DC or DC, like, lack of loyalty thing. It's like, let's say in his heart of hearts, he thinks Flag is lame. First of all, it's really annoying to me that he didn't even write those songs, you know what I mean? And he's commenting on them, you know? But I mean, saying, like, let's say in his heart of hearts, he really does think it's lame and damages. You don't see him dissing on the Damned, do you? He'll diss on the Flag, but not the Damned. He loves the Damned. You know, what's the difference? No difference. But the point being is, in his heart of hearts, let's say he really does think it's lame of Flag to do Flag, and he thinks it tarnishes the Black Flag legacy. That being said, you know...
What's left to tarnish? Well, the Black Flag legacy.
Well, no, but I mean, don't you agree that in your mind, and most people's mind, there's a separation between Greg Ginn as Black Flag and the rest of Black Flag? You know,
yeah, Black Flag ended in 1986. Yeah, the one that ended in 1986 and everything after.
Right. So the point, what I'm saying is, in his heart of hearts, let's say he really does think what Keith and Chuck and Dez needs the money too, you know.
I'm sure they all do, honestly.
Let's say he thinks what they're doing is lame. You know, they were all friendly towards him. Keith Morris used to go, when people would diss on Henry in the late 90s and early 2000s for the Henry cliches, Keith would defend Henry in the Black Flag Facebook. On the Circle Jerks, he would defend Henry all the time. When Henry needed a little extra juice for his West Memphis 3 tour, he asked Keith to come open for him, which definitely gave it a little bit more pop. You know, the original Black Flags, you know, doing Black Flag for the first time in, like, ever, you know. And then the minute that's all over with, he starts trashing on Keith. What the classy thing to be, you say, oh, well, you know, they're doing their thing, that's cool, or just not comment on it. Like, why comment on it, and why diss on it? Why not just shut up about it if they're really your friend, you know?
Yeah. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all, right?
Well, I don't know if I go by that, but if you don't have anything, like if it's your friend, then stick up for your friend, or if you really can't stick up from them, because, you know, the DC guys, even Ian MacKaye does this, he's like, I always tell the truth, I never lie. Okay, so let's say you don't, let's say you think Flag is lame, and you don't want to say you think it's cool, then dance around the question. Don't diss, you know? Like there's no loyalty, no sense of friendship, no sense
say,
of appreciation.
These guys have, here's what you say. These guys have earned the right to do whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly. Why not say that? Like, but why diss on them? The only reason is because you're passive aggressive and you have that venom in you, or you're saying it to make yourself look cooler.
Two guys that have money.
Yeah, I hear you. So, all right, well.
I mean, the only guy of Flag, I mean, Steven Egerton probably is not too bad. Bill Stevenson's probably the only one who's got any money.
Right.
And that's probably largely due to his production stuff.
Exactly. And also, he was luck. Not, I don't know if luck's the right word, but he was able to be semi-popular during the Epiphat era in the 90s.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, he's a great drummer. I don't begrudge him anything.
No,
and a great producer.
No. I think they all should be rich, but you know, it's like, well, anyways, so that's our take on Henry. Listen, let's talk about something else we can condemn, and then maybe we'll get to some happier. We got something else we gotta condemn too, so maybe we'll shut. Actually, we got a lot of condemnation on this episode, Tom. I'm gonna do a couple happy ones after this, but listen,
was there any mail, John? We're gonna do any mail or no? We're gonna skip it.
We're gonna skip mail because we're already running late, and also I was locked out of my email for two or three weeks, so I haven't even gotten to it yet.
How peaceful was that? You know, when I was on vacation, you know why it was so – I was as relaxed last week as I've been in probably 10 years. And part of it was I had no phone. It's like as soon as I got back to New Orleans, oh, I got phone again. Oh, jeez, there's 200 emails about crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that you miss that sort of being disconnected thing. It was sweet.
We all had that about 15 years ago, Tom, or 10 years ago. You know?
I know it. We didn't appreciate it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. People do rush headlong into technology that they shouldn't. Like, everyone's got those, like, what do you call Amazon Echoes or whatever. That shit is so dangerous. Like, I would never allow any of that shit in my house. But, like, most of my friends had it in their house. It's crazy.
Oh, my wife's got one. She loves it. Yeah, and, yeah, I know. It's like, hey, spy device, order me the new record.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, Blink-182 was on the new Extension album. If you don't know who Extension is actually a insanely popular rapper. And
definitely one of my most anticipated releases of 2020.
He last year, he got like multiple number one albums. The problem with Extension is that he was alleged to have done severe physical abuse, kidnapping, as well as other things. Perhaps the worst thing he did was abuse of a pregnant woman and slash sexual abuse of a pregnant woman. And if you read some of the transcript of the things that he talked about doing, it makes your blood curdle or whatever that phrase, like it chilled. Like he's a bad, bad guy. And he got,
well, now he's number one with a bullet, John.
Well, he got convicted, but he only did like 30 weeks of house arrest or whatever. Meanwhile, that lady that like lied about what school district her kid should go to got 7 years, which is insane. You know, like it's worse to lie about what school district your kids should go to than to sexually abuse a pregnant woman. Like he's a bad, like he's bad. But I guess the most disheartening thing was, is that no one cared. Like the punkers cared to a degree, I guess. But like no matter, he was still, after all of that, he was still number one on the charts for a long time. And
well, let's face it, hip hop misogyny is still a major thing in hip hop.
That's true, but it is in other genres too. But you are correct about that, you know.
But I noticed that metal like was the other one that was always bad about that.
Metal's toned
it
down. That
it started to turn.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
There's a few, and it's almost gonna be as annoying as punk rock, I think. Like where it's gone so far around where it's actually super annoying now. The political correctness, I mean.
True. But we should point out that not all hip-hop is misogynist, and some is the exact opposite. Namely, Run the Jewels, namely Nicki Minaj.
I was on my belly getting a little ink today. I got, like, I'm trying to fill in the back of my leg. So I'm getting just, like, random tattoo pieces on my leg. And they were listening to the 90s hip-hop channel. And it was brutal, man. For one thing, I'm not a big hip hop guy. A couple of songs I like.
I love hip hop, but I mean, a lot of it is pretty disgusting.
I mean, but in the 90s, still, it was very, very misogynistic.
Well, honestly, it's kind of worse now. Some of
is it really?
Some of it
even,
is.
Even XXXTentacion.
Oh, he's way worse than what you heard, Tom. Definitely. Anyways, Extension was killed in a robbery type situation. His first post-mortem album was released this past week. Somewhat surprisingly,
oh, it's out. Oh my gosh, I gotta get on this.
Somewhat surprisingly, the last band on the last track, the featured band was Blink-182, and there's a lot of ways you could bend that. It's like, first of all right, Blink-182, you're punk, or you claim to be punk, or at least you claim not to be ultra misogynist. Why are you on this record with this literal pregnant woman abuser? I mean, it doesn't get much lower than that, and you're on the record with him. However, the counter argument, Tom, is when you're a major label band, like they'll record you and not even tell you where that's going, and you have no control over it. So Blink-182 hypothetically could have an out, and it's like, well, we record this for a feature on someone's album, we didn't know whose, and we don't have.
So is it? It's in a new recording though. It wasn't just like they used a piece of their music.
No. It's new Blink-182 recordings that was recorded. Probably specifically for a hip hop track, possibly recorded specifically for an Extension track, but we don't know if it was.
See, I wonder if they get a pass on that you know, because of, once again, that same crowd, that politically correct crowd, is afraid to kind of touch anything, you know, African, that's involved with African American stuff.
Walk carefully here, Tom.
I know, and well, no, and I know, but I get that. But you, there is an element of that sometimes, you know. There is a certain segment of society that they just don't want to even deal with that, you know. And it can be the very politically correct crowd. They just don't want to wade into those waters, and this might be one of those situations. I don't know.
But how about the punk side, though? You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Those same punks might not want to touch it because it's just
involved. I don't know. I don't know if that's true, though, because, like,
I don't know if it is either. The modern punks are so insufferable, I don't know what they go after anymore, but they might just go after me. Me, well, John. Me.
Well, the mainstream general, they don't give a shit about it. Extension's great, even though he's literally a sexual abuser. But I mean, like, Tom, should we assume Blink-182 knew they were going to be part of an extension track, or do we have to assume that they just recorded?
I always prefer to assume the worst when it comes to Blink-182. So I'm going to say that they recorded this piece of music, they didn't know what to do with it, and they said, we need this to go to someone who sexually abused a pregnant woman. I can just see the meeting with their manager now.
But how about Skiba, man? I mean, Skiba kind of is a, you know, has made comments that, you know, sexism is bad, racism is bad, and then he's on this track with this bad guy, you know? I mean, like...
I don't know, John. I don't know. Maybe, you know, everybody's innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, well,
or he was actually convicted.
You know, people dissing on Keith Morris by people, I mean...
Is it because he's dead? It's either because he's black or because he's dead.
Top. All right.
I don't know. Listen, I don't give a crap about Extension. I mean, I never like to see a 22-year-old guy get shot down the street or whatever, however old he was. I don't know, 20. I mean, he was like 20, right? I mean,
he was
like
very real young.
I mean, I don't like to see that happen anyway, but I don't care about his music. These face tattooed rappers, man, I can't get down with them.
But I mean, the question is not about, like, we all agree he's bad, but the question is, what do we do with Blink-182 in this context?
I think we should ban them from all punk circles. Oh, that's right. They don't run in punk circles anymore. Nobody cares. But then, you know what I mean? They're not. They don't belong to punk rock anymore. But, so, you mean, we can ban them. The 924 Gilman crowd can say, oh, we won't have anything to do with Blink-182 anymore, but it ain't going to hurt them any.
But, Tom, on the Punk News website, most of the readers love Blink-182.
Well, you know, I think we should ban them from Punk News.
All right. Make it so.
I mean, I couldn't possibly work for an organization that supported. If we're not going to ban Blink-182, consider this my formal resignation.
Make it so. All right, let's play a song. Tom, you got a song to play or what?
I don't. You better go first. I'll try to think of one. I'm going to play the new Extentacion song.
I haven't even thought about what I'm going to play. I've been listening to a lot of new music lately. I played...
Me too. I just don't have any MP3s, John. I've gone so... So here's my listening now. I don't have an iPod anymore. I don't listen to music on my phone other than maybe pull up a YouTube clip just to listen to something for a minute. I literally listen to vinyl at home and CDs in my car. That is my listening. So I don't really have a great way to send you a track, you know, other than, you know, saying, hey, John, play this random YouTube clip or whatever.
Yeah, honestly, I've been doing a lot of cassettes lately, not because I love cassettes, but just because that's what I've been digging and has been coming out on.
Like obscure, like, Canadian noise punk bands?
Well, not Canadian, but...
like, what are you listening to on cassette?
That band Clear Channel.
Huey Lewis, the News, Sports?
Yeah, yeah. No, like new punk bands. Like Zorn just put out a cassette tape. Zorn's an awesome band from Philadelphia. It's kind of like Ink and Dagger to a degree. I'm listening to Clear Channel, which is that weird post-punk band I played last week. Stuff like that. Burger Records stuff.
You know. So, John, I went to it. So while you're trying to figure out which song to play, I'll tell a slight anecdote here. So Tuesday night, two nights ago, I went to see Madball at a little club here in Grand Rapids. I'm a Madball fan. I know a lot of people laugh about them, but anyway, I think they were actually a pretty good, legit New York hardcore band. But there was virtually only the opening bands. There was four bands. Only the first two bands, local, had any music for sale, and they had CDs. There was literally no vinyl in the entire place, and the headliner was Madball, of course, and the direct support was this band from Chicago called Karma, and all they had was, like, t-shirts and sweatshirts. No frickin' vinyl. It was pitiful, man. I didn't...
Well, because vinyl's, super expensive, Tom.
I bought nothing, though. I mean, I literally bought nothing.
Well, tell me you want cassette tapes.
No, I don't. I don't want cassette tapes. I was tempted to buy, like, the opening bands were pretty decent, and they had CDs, and I probably should have bought them, but I'm so backed up in my CD listening. I just have hundreds of them just stacked up all over the place. I mean, I could build, like, fake walls in my home with CDs.
CDs are awesome. But listen, this is not out on CD. This is Zorn, which I talked about, a Philadelphia death rock hardcore band. Their tape release is next Friday. I'll be there in Philadelphia, Cousin Danny's. The new tape is called Hardcore Zorn, and here's something from Hardcore Zorn. And Tom, that was Zorn. Let's see what we want to talk about here.
So is that like a pun, like hardcore porn, hardcore Zorn?
I believe the title is of that.
Or is it like a Devo reference?
Oh, hardcore Devo? I think it's a reference of hardcore porn. Because before there was Zorn, there were a band called The Dolts. And they had a song called like Handjob Mania or something.
Still anyway. Not nearly as disturbing as that stupid brony band. You,
oh man,
Big Duke Manholy or whatever.
I just bought another one of his. Tom's talking about Big Moose.
Why do you keep buying these cassettes? Why are you buying these perverse cassettes?
Because they're like $2 each, and they're so bizarre, Tom. They're so bizarre.
You think you're counting on him dying of some kind of autoerotic asphyxiation, and the prices of his cassettes skyrocketing on Discogs?
I've just been collecting weirder and weirder meat. Like, you know who David Lieb Hart is?
Does not ring a bell.
David Lieb Hart is sort of like a Wesley
Willis. I mean, I like David Lee Roth's early material.
David Lieb Hart is sort of like a Wesley Willis type character. Not as extreme as Wesley Willis. Okay. And so he puts out all these CDs, and he just put out an edition of a CD he has where he hand-drew the covers. And honestly, I don't even really love the music.
Like each one?
Each one, he's got a hand-drawn cover. And they were $20 nice. Each. I'm like, dude, this guy's so weird and unique. I'm buying one. You know what I mean? So I've been getting like just weirder and weirder, like unique handmade stuff, you know? I mean, Tom, there's only like 10 Big Moose Man Holington tapes, and I've got one of them, you know?
Big Moose Man
Literally, like he puts out editions of like 10 or 20 tapes, you know?
I mean, how can you get the crowd to sing along if you only make 10 copies or something?
Because the kids listen to the MP3s, but also I don't know if he's got a crowd. I think I might be the crowd, you know?
It's amazing. You're totally repulsed by it. Meanwhile, you're his biggest backer.
Well, I'm fascinated by it because I truly don't know is he truly a maniac and a person with actual problems, or he's just some kid that's great at performance art. I don't know, you know? He emailed me once, and I did get creeped out. And also, Tom, this is true. Whenever I order something from him, I use a P.O. box because I don't want him to have my address. That's true.
There you go.
Listen, but speaking of a band that doesn't creep me out and a band that I love, Tom, the Expats. They're putting out a new EP. They actually just put out an EP a couple of months ago for Hercules, but now they're putting out an EP for a song called I'm a Witch. The band is somewhat interestingly in that the drummer / singer, her name is Inez, and the guitar player is her dad. And the dad's kind of a real hippie kind of guy. And I if it was my daughter, it's not. If it's, like, there's some relatively sexual songs. And so I think that'd be weird playing in a band with your daughter, but I don't think he cares. You know, I think this band is absolutely great. They're kind of jangly punk, and I think they're fantastic, and I'm excited for this EP. Tom, I don't know if you check this out or not, but...
I haven't. I did zero research, John. I have zero preparation.
They've got one song like where she talks about like wanting to have sex with a guy and other, like that'd be weird if you were to band like with one of your kids, right, Tom? Like, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable with that, but you know, whatever. Everybody's got their own relationship with their kids, right?
Well, listen, Expats really are a cool band. Their last album was called I've Got the Hots for Charlie Watts, which was one of my favorite records of last year. They put out a compilation after that out via Burger Records called Ease for Expats, which is their first two albums put together. They're just a great band. I mean, if you like kind of like weird, jangly-ish punk, sort of like Vivian Girls, but not really. I'm trying to think of an example. Just kind of, you guys know the kind of stuff I like. Kind of funny, kind of weird. But punk, it's real good. You should check it out. Tom, here's an interesting thing. Rancid is re-releasing, not Outcome of the Wolves. What's the one after that?
Life Won't Wait?
Like, well, they're re-releasing Life Won't Wait for the 20th anniversary. It came out in 1998, and so apparently this is the 20th anniversary.
Good old 21st anniversary.
The new version, Tom.
Let me guess, it's going to be 14 7-inch records.
It is four 12-inch records that play at 45. So it's eight.
I love flipping records as much as possible. That is my goal in life.
Some of the sides only have two songs per side. And you can also order a mini baseball bat that comes with the album that says Rancid on the back.
They did that before.
And it's got a skull on the other side.
One of their other box sets had that too.
Tom, I'll let you have the reaction, but I will point out that there famously are many, many B-sides and outtakes from this album. And there's an excellent bootleg that's got the entire Silencers demo on one side and other songs from this era on the other side that is still the music is still unreleased. Tom, what's your take on this?
You know, I am not a big enough Rancid fan to need that much, that extended of a version for one album. But listen, man, they got fans that are that into it. Good for them. It seems like a little bit like fleecing those who are willing to be fleeced, but you know, they're willing to be fleeced. So
yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, so I've been to like, so a really cool place to go if you're ever in Kentucky, John, I mean, you're an East Coast guy. You might not be in Kentucky very often, but like is the Louisville Slugger Museum where they actually make, I think they still make the wood bats for most of their like pro players. And every time you go on a tour there, they give you one of those little baseball bats. And I've been there a couple times and the family's been there a couple times. So I have like 10 of these little tiny baseball bats. And I got to tell you, they are the most useless thing you'll ever have. So, I mean, it might be kind of fun to have a little Rancid baseball bat, but let me tell you something, it won't be any good. And if you have kids and you bring it in your car, they'll be beating each other in the heads with them.
I mean, what do you think? Like, hey, like this Rancid baseball, it's stupid. Like what does baseball have to do with Rancid? You know, beating people up, I guess. When's the last time Rancid was in like a gang beatdown? And also I'll point out that it's really like Rancid loves the gang mentality. Lars loves these songs about being in a gang. But like gang beatdowns are like the lamest thing ever. It's like eight guys jump one guy. Like you're saying, oh, I'm a tough guy because me and my seven friends, each who have baseball bats, can jump one guy and beat him up or kill him. Well, wow, good for you. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, like, you're making fun of Social Distortion. Well, at least Mike Ness goes after four guys at once.
Well, I'll give him credit for that. I will give him credit for that.
And he doesn't even have a mini baseball bat.
That's true.
Just uses lefty and righty.
And the other thing is like, why are we celebrating gang violence? Like, why aren't we celebrating higher education or helping one's fellow? You know, is Jello Biafra going to come out with a mini baseball bat? Is Keith Morris going to come out with a mini baseball bat? No, it's kind of stupid.
John, do you even punk, bro? Do you even punk,
bro?
I guess not.
But here's the other thing. What annoys me the most about this is it's kind of lazy in that, like, there are, like, I trash on Rancid a lot, and it's unfortunate because I actually like Rancid.
I know you do. I know you're a fan. You're a bigger fan than I am.
I think I am. And there about 2 or 3 years ago, an Italian label put out three Rancid bootlegs. One was bootlegs for Let's Go and Out Come the Wolves. One was bootlegs for Domino's Fall. I don't know why they put that out. But the other was
public demand.
Was outtakes from Life Won't Wait. On one side, it was the Life Won't Wait B-sides and outtakes, and the flip side was the entire Silencers demo. Of course, the Silencers was Rancid and the Slackers, and they put out one song officially. I think Mike Park might have been slightly involved with that, too. They put out one track on one of the Give the Boot comps. I think it's called Policeman Kicks Me in the Head or something like that, and it's a great song. you can hear the entire demo on YouTube. It's not bad, Tom. It's like really, really, really good. Like really good. So why instead
of... So it's hard to believe that there's like a Rancid side project that didn't get properly released. It seems like everything they do now gets a proper release.
I mean, if we could put out Charger, then we could put out the Silencers. You know, it's like...
You didn't like Charger?
Nah, I thought it was fine and okay, but if I'm going to listen to Motorhead, I'm going to listen to Motorhead. You know?
Yeah, but Motorhead's never going to put out any more new music. There's always, you know...
Yeah, but they've already got 97 albums, so I can work my way through.
That's true. I mean, like, you get that late, those bad 90s albums.
What is with the stout refusal to, like put out... like even when they put out the B and C sides collection, it was so lazy, they didn't have all the B and C sides, although maybe they could license them, but they didn't even, like, give you, like, little information about, like, where the songs were from. Like it gives me the impression that Rancid really doesn't care about Rancid, you know? Like, why not give the fans what the fans want?
It doesn't seem...
Because
it's
quality material. It's not bad, it's quality, you know?
After hearing the new Old Firm Casuals record this year, it had way more fire than anything Rancid's done recently.
So you think they don't care about
Rancid? I
don't
know if you're a fan of that band or not. I'm kind of hit or miss with them, but man, I think the new record was really good.
I thought the new record was good. I liked how it was different. I actually liked the first record a lot, you know, except for...
You talk about the four-song EP? I like that a lot.
Well, they put out a CD that had, like, their first, like, 6-7 inches on it. The only thing that annoyed me about the Old Firm Casual... Well, two things. First is it had that gag mentality thing. Well, three things. It had the gang mentality thing. The second is there's one song, like, if you don't like us, we'll beat you up. It's like, Lars, you're so self-conscious. If I don't like you, you and your friends are going to beat me up just because I don't like you? You know, like why do you need me to like you?
Listen, I'm not affiliated with John Gentile, guys. I'd like you to know that. His opinions do not represent mine.
Well, did I ever tell the story in the podcast about how the skunks almost jumped me once? I think I
did. What?
Lars' gang almost jumped me once.
Are they called the Skunks?
The Skunks.
No, I don't... Why were they... Did you book his band to play at your coffee shop?
Should I tell this story?
Yeah, I don't care.
All right, I'll tell you. It's been a long time anyways. So, actually, now I think it was Hunter Down who got me. It was one of the Doors. I'm pretty sure it was Hunter Down that helped me out. So anyways, I went to see Blowfly... And one of the opening bands was Trash Cannon, and it was basically like Limp Bizkit, except for it was like Limp Bizkit meets Madball.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
And they wore trash can lids on their backs, like Ninja Turtles, that said Trash Cannon. And Tom, it was so bad. I'm like this is so bad, it has to be a joke, right? But I didn't get the impression that it was, because they're like, we're Trash Cannon. If you mess with us, we'll kick your ass. And they start like rapping like really badly to Madball riffs. It was like really bad. Like, it was one of the worst sets I've ever seen, and it was comical, but I still don't know if it was supposed to be comical or not, right? And so later on, my friend Matt and I went to see Paul Di'Anno of Iron Maiden do all Iron Maiden, right? And so when we were at the club, I say to my friend Matt, I say, oh, the last time I was here, I saw this band Trash Cannon, and they were so amazingly bad. I was blown away about how bad they were. One of the waitresses, it was at the Voodoo Lounge in San Jose, that's closed up now. She comes up to me and she says, were you talking about Trash Cannon? And I was like, yeah, I was. She's like, well, what do you think of them? And I'm like, well, do you want my honest opinion? And she's like, yes, I do. So I said, I don't think that much of them. I honestly don't know. They were so bad, I don't know if they were serious or not. Do you know if they were supposed to be serious? And then she says to me, she says, well, Trash Cannon, they're working hard, and they're doing it right. They're coming from the ground up. They're going places. And you know what? She said, like, Trash Cannon or the Skunks are here or something like that, because they're part of the Skunks, Trash Cannon. So then, like, eight Skunks, like come up and kind of surround me, you know? And I've got my back to the pool table, and my friend Matt, he's not a fighter, Tom, and I know if shit's going down, I got problems, right? So I got my back to the pool table, and I'm like, I've got one chance, and they're, getting up in my face, right? So I grabbed the cue ball behind my back. I'm like, I've got one chance, because I know two blocks up, it's El Camino Real in San Jose, two blocks up on 2nd and El Camino Real, cops always hang out on a Saturday night, because I don't know about now, but 10 years ago, it was a pretty crazy place. A lot of people went there to get drunk, so like young people, so there's a lot of problems, you know, in that context.
You're like, I smash one guy's face and get past him, and I get out there.
That was my plan. I was going to smash him in the face, sprint out the door, hope they don't grab the back of my shirt, and then go sprint two blocks up the street to the cops, you know. And yeah. so like it's getting like they're just kind of like yelling and they're not even like talking. I'm like, this is getting bad. Then Hunter Down, I'm pretty sure it was Hunter Down. It might not have been, but I think it was Hunter Down of the Dwarves. It was one of the younger dwarves. Like he knew me briefly because I saw him at a dwarf show one time, and he like defused the situation without like putting anybody down, and that like really saved my ass. Like it really did. So
is there anything the dwarves can't do? They can save rock and roll. They can
save me.
They can take back the night. They can do almost anything.
That was crazy, Tom. That was crazy, you know.
Man, it would have been so sweet if you'd have taken your sock off, both socks off, and put a cue ball and the eight ball, one in each sock, and you just double fisted your way out of there, just cracking skulls with pool cues or pool balls.
So anyway,
but when you retell the story to your grandchildren, that'll be what happens.
So that's why I'm a little bit bitter towards Lars, and of course it wasn't Lars who like directed all that.
That's but so
it,
funny. But it's that, yeah, that's that might be a little misdirected there, but hey, whatever.
Well, it's that mentality. I can't get behind the gang mentality because the gang mentality is so anti-punk rock. It really is. Agree or do you disagree?
I saw Madball and they're meeting up with Old Firm Casuals for a few shows like Detroit and Chicago.
Yeah, they're good friends. That Lars and Freddie Christian are like good friends.
Okay.
Yeah,
Freddie's legit, dude.
Freddie is legit. I interviewed Freddie once, and he was like really nice. Like about 7 or 8 years ago, like Madball was the butt of everyone's joke, and people were dissing on Madball so much. And
a lot of it was a punk news specific thing.
Yeah, true.
Matter of fact, I'm writing this. I'm probably going to review the show. I've really started on it. I'm kind of winding down on my reviewing career, but I don't know. We'll see. I still like to write about shows probably, but I've like spent two paragraphs just like explaining that, like that Madball should be the butt of the joke.
So I interviewed Freddie almost as like a joke. Like at the time I was doing what I would consider difficult interviews and he was
mad cut.
He was just a nice guy that had some interesting things to say, you know? So I can't really diss on Madball, you know?
I told the story before on the podcast, and once again, it's been a long time, but when in 1996, I saw Madball in 96, and then it was almost 20 years later before I saw him again. Now I've seen him like three times in the last few years. But they were booked to play at this dumpy club, which was our punk club here in Grand Rapids that we all loved. And about the same time, and I only understood the story later. I didn't really understand what the situation was until years later. But that same club got a chance to book the reconstituted Misfits, which was the Graves era Misfits when they just put out American Psycho. Was that the first one?
I think so. I don't know. I don't care.
Was it or was it Famous Monsters? No, I think American Psycho was the first one. So they booked that. So they just booked both shows. So they made the Misfits the headliners and Madball open. And in the show was overflowing, of course, because it was a big deal for the Misfits. And this is a tiny, dumpy club. It only held like 200 people. So they actually even opened the room next door, which is like this all-ages club, just so people could spread out a little bit. And Jerry and Doyle were in the back pumping iron. Like literally just like in front of everybody lifting weights. And they were enormous, you know. They're just giant meatheads. Jerry was younger, of course. Doyle's always been huge. Doyle's like 50, early 50s, and he looks amazing.
Yeah.
And Freddie was not pleased with how much room on the stage the Misfits crap was. They had like antlers and all kind of, you know, it's like this tiny dumpy club, and the Misfits looked like they thought they were playing the Taj Mahal or something, you know. And Freddie really called him out from the stage and talked tons of trash, and he probably weighed about 150 pounds at the time, so he sort of has my undying respect.
What did he say? Do you remember or you don't really remember?
Yeah, he called them, you know, Misfits pussies or Misfits faggots or something. Dude, it was like fighting words.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was like I said, the guy was, I mean, he was just this little skinhead guy back in those days. Now he's had long hair the last few times I see him. He looks like a metal guy. But, you know, heavy music and metal in general has become so marginalized that you see these weird package tours. Like the last time I saw him was like Hatebreed, Obituary, Madball, and Prong, and Skeleton Witch. I mean, what kind of a lineup is that, right?
I'm all for mixed lineups.
Well, it was good, you know. I mean, I'm not a Hatebreed fan, right? I mean, who is, right?
Yeah, who is?
But they put together these amazing packages. So, I mean, some of the shows had Agnostic Front on them. They had all different lineups. But anyway, it was a cool show. So anyway, Madball and Old Firm Casuals. Yeah, they were playing, I think, Detroit tonight, maybe in Chicago on Friday or Saturday or something. Should go see that.
Well, anyway, in those areas. A couple last stories. Tom, I don't know if you have any perspective on this or not. So Devin Kane, the Solutions, were going to put out their new album on paper and plastic. Yep. But then, quite surprisingly, it was pulled from paper and plastic. They put out a statement that says, quick seriousness, if you ordered our record, Yes, I Can through paper and plastic, you should be receiving a refund. We are no longer pressing our record through that avenue. And then they said they're looking for other venues to release the record on. Tom, paper and plastic just has nonstop problem after nonstop problem.
What is, see, okay, so I have a little bit of insight on this, but not much, because I really don't know what the overall problem is. But a local band here in town that I know, the drummer specifically, I know pretty well, he went on Facebook, I think today or yesterday, and was like, F paper and plastic. They used our stuff without permission. They blah, blah, blah. And I never heard, I didn't know about all these problems with paper and plastic.
They got a lot of problems. They do have a lot of
and
problems.
And I don't know. I mean, they're hardly Victory or something. You know, it's a small label. They put out a couple albums that I mail ordered from, like, last year. I like a lot of their stuff. Not
you,
a lot
did
of
you get
stuff.
It? Because yeah. One of the problems with paper and plastic is people order stuff and never get it.
I mean, they were having, like, a 30% off sale. I'm like, oh, cool. So I ordered, like, 3 LPs. And then, like, they had a 50% off sale, like, the next week. So that was kind of irritating. But, no, I didn't have any problems at all. I mean, it's one of the dudes from
Less Than Jake.
Less Than Jake, yeah, the drummer, right? Italian, real Italian sounding name. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, it doesn't Vinny, right, or something like that. I don't know. So I don't know exactly what's going on. But like I said, the local guy here basically insinuated that label was using their stuff without permission or putting it out without permission or something like that. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
What do you know? You know anything about it or not really?
The only thing that I know is that they famously have lots of problems getting stuff out, even within like 5 or 6 months of when it's supposed to be out.
Okay.
They continually have pressing problems and these kinds of problems. It's like they don't promote your stuff at all. So it's like, well, why, like, are you making, like, Devin Kane's Solutions, like, how big is that band really? Like, not really, I think. Like, I think, like, I know some.
I saw them this summer. They're from Chicago. They're essentially a direct hit side project. And how big is direct hit? Not very big, right?
Right.
I mean, so, direct hit is, like, probably one of the very smallest, like, fat bands.
And what did surprise me, we talked about this briefly, like, a number of episodes ago, is that, like, these buzz bands, like, they actually sell far fewer records than you think they sell. You know, and so, like,
everybody sells far fewer records.
True. And so the question is that, like, what, like, if paper and plastic is having all these problems, why are they putting these records out? Like, who's buying them? I don't think anybody is. I think they just sit on stock. So why are they doing this? You know, I don't know. I feel it's,
so. Here's my friend's post, right? I won't mention it by name. You could triangulate it if you. People that are local here, but it says eat shit paper and plastic. When I said paper and plastic sucks, I meant it. They took from the name of their band without our permission, and that seems to be the norm for them. Fuck the label. They are the worst. Do not support them.
Who's that? Who said that?
He's a friend of mine who drums for a local band here.
Well, he put it on Facebook, Tom. That's a public. Oh, is it one of the
okay, ladies? Anyway, it's a drummer for a local band called Bong Mountain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, yeah, they're like.
I'm just, you know, I'm friendly with a guy, and let me see.
Like, why
is release, paper? Okay, this is what he says. They released some stupid USB thing with us and Junior Battles that neither of us ever agreed to.
Like, why is paper and plastic, like, getting involved with Bong? Like, not that Bong Mountain's a bad band. I know you like them, Tom, and they're cool and they're fine.
They're friends of mine. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the. If they were from Cleveland, I probably wouldn't be into them.
But I mean, like, it's not like they're selling like tens of thousands of records.
No. So why is paper? I think they pressed 500 copies. I mean, I think their debut album pressed 500 copies.
So, like, why?
I'm sure they get streamed way more than Vinyl Lovers.
Why is paper and plastic even getting involved in any of that? Like, what's to be gained?
I don't know. Well, I noticed paper, because so they put out a EP for a band that I'm friendly with out of Detroit, but it was digital only, and I'm just like, what is the advantage of
Yeah.
A label put out your digital EP for, I mean, I guess you could probably get a little more exposure.
I guess
maybe there's a promise of, you know, the next one you get a vinyl pressing. I don't know.
Or maybe it's a marketing, like they've got marketing connections, you know.
I mean, you know, it's what they're one of those labels, you know, they have, it has a certain amount of panache behind it. They're kind of a, they're not a bad label.
Yeah, but they're always getting involved in shenanigans and like what, like they're getting.
I don't know.
But like they're constantly getting involved in the shenanigans with small bands that really not that many people care about. So like why not just stop putting out records for a while and get your shit put together? Like,
yeah, like, you know, they put out a couple of Detroit bands that I really like. They put out their records. They put out the Break Anchor record and the only record they put out, and they put out the middle Hellmouth album. Both those are James from Suicide Machines projects. And but I mean, what they press, 1,000 records? I don't know.
Yeah, like,
I mean, it's not like, you know, it's just the kids don't care about physical music, John. They don't want to clutter up their tiny apartments with this stuff.
Yeah, well. Listen, Tom, to wrap up tonight's episode, guess what I'm doing tomorrow, and then guess what I'm doing on Saturday?
Putting on some sweatpants and chilling out?
Tomorrow I'm going to see the Danzig movie, and then on Saturday I'm going to see
my Misfits. Oh, is this your Danzig weekend?
It's my Danzig weekend.
That's sweet. Dude, the movie, I cannot wait to hear your report on the movie next week.
I don't know if I'm going to do a physical, like a written review or not. I mean, I'll definitely talk about it on the podcast, but like, I don't know if I'm going to do a written review because it's not going to be good, you know?
Dude, you think you were scared of the skunks. You don't want the Danzig posse
coming down. Well, it's not that, John. I mean, honestly, I'll be frank. I want a Danzig interview. I'm probably not going to get one. I got sort of close twice and it crapped out, but I really want a Danzig interview.
You'll probably get like Steve Zing or something.
Yeah, well. I want to talk to the man because honestly, the man has not given a good interview probably for 30 years. You know,
he's never gonna. He will never give it. Danzig will never go to get an interview. The only person to get a good interview out of him is Howard Stern. No offense to you, my friend.
I think I could do better than Howard for sure.
That's true. Howard's no good anymore either. I read private while I was on vacation. I read the Miss America book and I remembered how much I loved Howard back in the day.
I think I could crack Danzig because I think everyone always approaches him from the wrong angle.
You can't handle the truth. You think you can do him like Jack Nicklaus style? Get him to break?
No, I mean,
you're damn right. I ordered that code red.
People that interview Danzig. Actually, I'm not gonna tell the secret on the podcast in case someone else hears it and gets it. So I'm keeping it to myself. But I think I know the secret.
Still your plan.
So if I ever get the chance, so I'm probably not gonna write a review of it because he'll see it because he does see that kind of stuff. And it, you know, and then it'll kill my chance of getting an interview with him. So,
dude, or by reverse psychology, of course, you'd have to sell your soul, but you could write a glowing review because there hasn't been many of those. That might get you over the top.
Well, actually, there had, you know, in the Danzig
Facebook, totally sell out all your integrity, but
in the Danzig Facebook group, they'll post like reviews from like some website like that, like no one reads, and it'll be like Danzig
German porn site or something.
It's like Danzig movie is a loving homage to the Italian horror films of the 1960s. It's like, no, it's not. It's just terrible.
It's written by a guy who wears a pony costume and is into scat films.
So anyways, that's what.
But that's awesome. You're going to see the Misfits again too.
And actually, Tom, I am pleased to announce that my gambling strategy worked. I waited till 2 weeks beforehand. StubHub tickets crashed, and I got like a ticket for like one third the price.
What kind of seats?
I wanted to get floor seats, but floor seats were still at $200. So I got the seats right in front of the floor seats for $70.
Oh, nice. That's, you know, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
At least you have the option of sitting down between bands and all that.
Yeah, I'd love to get a floor seat, but then again, maybe you can't see anything like with these floor seats. I don't know. You know, or not floor seats, standing room only, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care. The problem is, well, not the problem, and this is a minor complaint. I don't care about the opening bands at all. It's like Dropkick Murphys and like, who's the other one? I don't even know. Let's see here.
There's three openers, isn't there, or two?
I think there's only two this time. I would have loved for it to be Harley and the Damned like it was at one show, but listen, you can't have everything, you know. I did see
that's
Harley.
Funny. Dropkick Murphys don't open for many bands anymore. You know, they are the fact of the matter is they're probably a bigger draw than the Misfits in, you know, as a touring act.
But, I don't think so. Than the Misfits.
Well, Danzig, but yeah, but the Misfits haven't toured. They're just playing these giant shows, you know.
I think the Misfits will outdraw Dropkick Murphys any day of the week. I mean,
they will right now, but I wonder if that would hold true if they,
yeah,
you know, kept going. But
Danzig's smart, and he's not going to do that. I mean, he might do more shows, but yeah, it's Agnostic Front and Dropkick Murphys. You know, I've seen Agnostic Front. It's fine, you know.
Yeah, they're both pretty good. I'm trying. It's funny. I was Googling to try to find it, and I said Danzig in Philadelphia, and I have three dentists pop up. Hmm. Apparently, the Danzig dentistry monopoly is strong in Philadelphia. Is your dentist a Danzig?
No. My dentist is the brother of a girl that I asked out once and she flaked out.
Well, at least you got a dentist out of it.
He's actually a really good dentist. He's like a really good. He's a young guy. He's like 26. I'm like, oh my God. But nice. He's like a really good dentist. He really is.
Huh. Mother. Tell your children not to floss their teeth. Like that.
Mother, tell your children to give me good reviews about my creepy porno movie. Tom, I cannot imagine filming a softcore porno or hardcore porno for that. But it'd be so awkward, you know? It'd be so weird. Like, can you imagine, like...
Yeah, especially if you're on the receiving end, brother.
Yeah, I mean, like, imagine, like, your dad's, like, you're sitting in the director's chair, and there's, like, a nude girl and a nude guy or whatever. You're like, okay, now, straddle the guy. Cameraman, get close to that. It's like, I would not want to do that at all. You know, it'd be so weird.
You know, our Danzig fan group, it is kind of sad because, you know, they'll show the pictures of him from, like, shirtless in, like, 1990. And he really was. He was chiseled, and he had the long hair. And now I see these pictures, you know, of the people in the same group getting pictures with him now. And it just, you know, he's old.
I still think he looks pretty cool. I mean,
But he looks sort of sad and wrinkly. It's like, it depends. He's like my dad's age, dude. He's like 65.
Yeah, he's like, what do you want, Tom?
I want him to look like he did in 1990.
Well, I think he still looks pretty cool for his age. You know, now he does the black t-shirt.
I don't know.
He does the leather jacket. For a while, he was doing, like, the weird mess t-shirt thing, which was kind of weird.
For a while? Yeah. You mean, like, 15 years?
Yeah, yeah. But now he's got the black leather jacket, the black pants, the boots. I think he looks cool, you know, for 65.
He's the sexy grandpa.
I mean, listen, man, when you're 65, it's hard to look cool, you know? So I think it looks David Byrne.
Dude, when you're 45, it's hard to look cool.
Yeah, I hear you. So
you're like, do I wear shoes that look good or do I go for comfort?
I think the embarrassing thing is, and actually Rollins' experiences after, like, Rollins lost all his muscle, like, when people would see Rollins, they'd be like, oh, you're so jacked, you're so tough, I won't mess with you. And then he lost all his muscle mass and people were still like, oh, you're so jacked. But he wasn't. Looks
normal. Danzig's just put on weight. Well, you know, Danzig didn't. Stays, you know, Rollins looks relatively thin. He looks.
No, but what I'm saying is it's somewhat embarrassing when people are like, oh, Henry, you're so ripped, and he's not ripped. I mean, he's just a guy now, you know. And so when Danzig like, oh, Danzig, he's so ripped. Well, no, he's a 65-year-old man, you know.
I mean, he's I'm sure he's, you know, got bigger biceps than an average 65-year-old man. But he was jacked, man. In the 90s, he was jacked too. You know, he looked good. I mean, I don't want to get all homoerotic on you, but he was a sexy man.
All I'm saying, Tom, is I think he looks cool. I don't know why you're disappointed how he looks. You know, he's
I don't know. Maybe I'm not attracted as attracted to 65-year-old men as I was to.
He looks better than Fat Mike, who's about 15 years younger than him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Fat Mike's kind of got his own thing going on. Sort of homeless chic.
He looks
transvestite than, homeless chic.
He looks better than he looks a lot better than a lot of punk rockers at his age or. I mean,
have you seen Dwayne Peters lately?
I have not, you know.
Well, you know.
Anyway, you going to play a song, Tom, or should we just wrap this bad boy on?
Let's just wrap it up. I've been sucking at playing songs lately, but well, it was fun. It was fun to get back to the, you know, mano on mano, two man, you know, never a dull moment, John. Never a dull moment with the two of us.
Dan on Dan.